In the great conference hall in the Watchtower, the League gathered and tried to assemble the pieces.
What are the casualties?
From what Superman and I were able to gather from a quick observational run before coming back here, the loss of human life was relatively low for a catastrophe of such range.
The greatest hit has been to Diego Garcia, as I had feared. Over 2,000 presumed dead. But those who were lucky enough to have been shipboard below steel decks have amazingly survived. The organism's substance, for some unknown fortuitous reason, didn't seem to penetrate steel.
Beyond that island, and including the Addu Atoll, probably fishing fleets from distant ports and other ships at sea, I would estimate perhaps another 1,500 souls lost.
And the cost to marine life is inestimable. We still don't know how much area the thing took up under the surface, but the ecology of the Indian Ocean, and possibly the entire planet, may be damaged for decades. Aquaman is working even now to do all that's possible to limit the extent of the disaster.
In addition, several much smaller anomalies appeared at the same time. The one in Antarctica was attended to by the Titans, but disappeared before more than a cursory observation could be performed. Five others were spotted in near-Earth space. Those have all since vanished. All things considered, the world's gotten off a lot easier than it might have. From what little information I was able to gather from it, the creature we encountered was a victim of some inconceivable violence in its own universe. It had no understanding of anything other than itself.
So, that thing that I killed was just a victim? It meant no harm to anybody?
Your decision spared it from any more pain, Kyle. It was suffering greatly. Death was probably welcome.
But I still... John... I thought you were under attack, wrapped up in the thing like that. I didn't know.
You did the right thing, Kyle.
Well, I sure don't feel like much of a hero for it.
Wally, what was the situation you encountered at the same time?
The thing attacked again. The superluminoid. I was speaking with Upchurch, the guy who made the thing, and it appeared. It killed Upchurch and dozens of his men, and it... Well, it didn't speak to me. I just knew what it wanted.
What did it want?
Iris. It wanted my aunt. Upchurch had created this thing from Iris's genes.
Iris? But why would he use her genes?
I don't know. It's something about her metagenes, but he took her genes and experimented on them and...
Wally, your aunt doesn't have any superpowers.
But she has the metagene. Her powers just never manifested. But Upchurch was trying to make them manifest. Instead, he created this... thing. So why do you think it throws all this alien crap at us while it's on a murder spree? Is it some sort of misdirection?
I don't think it's intentional, Wally. I don't think it necessarily means to inflict the residue of other universes on us.
I agree. Residue is the right word. And when I was linked with the Indian Ocean organism, I think what I saw was an entire universe destroyed in an instant. I'm guessing as a result of your superluminoid passing through. I think it may attain its faster-than-light speeds by jumping through connecting universes, using them as an infinite source of platforms to get from one point to another, like the Artevan Ryan model has theorized.
Patterns? Upchurch had mentioned that the superluminoid moved in patterns.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to jump cleanly, and maybe the residue of universes adjacent to ours gets pulled through.
Huh. Another thing I don't understand... Why do you suppose that with its super speed, it doesn't just tear through every metagene carrier in the whole damn world until it finds Iris? You'd think it could do that pretty quickly. Why is it waiting for me to show it to her?
I've been trying to figure that out myself, Wally. My first guess would be that it exhausts its power relatively quickly. You may have seen as many surgical harvests as it can do at a given time before its energy is expended. Let's face it, if it's hopping universes, it's expending incredible amounts of energy. So our one advantage may be that it is limited in the scope of damage it can inflict at one time.
Yeah, that might be true. But there were less than 6 hours between the first and second strikes, so I'm not sure how great an advantage that is.
Strange to hear that coming from the Flash. I think that would seem like an infinity of waiting for you.
Touché. And I did get the impression that its patience with me is wearing thin. If it is limited in its actions before it recharges, it's going to take a long time to single-handedly conquer the world. The sooner it can replicate itself, the more of itself it creates, the faster it'll get to its ultimate goal.
The Flash knew what he had to do next, and he wasn't looking forward to it.
I'm ready for that mind scan now.
Are you sure? You've been through the ringer today. 2 days in a row, actually. I may not be at my best either. If you want to wait a bit...
No. Now. This can't continue. You were right. This is bigger than what I thought, and if I've got anything locked in my mind to offer, I should have agreed to this yesterday before this round of disasters went down. I'm ready to do it.
He's right. Time is everything now. Let's get going and hope that Diana is right about it needing time to recharge.
Wally realized that he had been absently fingering his bandage. It reminded him of home.
Oh, Linda. I should call Linda first. I told her I wouldn't be adventuring tonight.
The Manhunter chose a small, darkened room for the scan. He could have performed it anywhere, but with all the confusion and distractions running through Wally's mind, as well as his own, the quieter and darker the better. Wally took his seat in the middle of the room, with the Manhunter sitting directly across from him. The speedster knew the others were watching unseen in the dark. He was very nervous, but he knew it had to be done. He knew this thing was bigger than him or his secret fears, but there was still that chunk of ego that desperately needed to stay in control.
Now, on your honor, I want you all to promise that if I do anything to embarrass myself, you will leave and never speak of this again.
If those were your everyday terms, we'd never have anything to talk about.
Kyle, please. Relax, Wally. Trust me. You'll feel nothing, you'll see nothing. All impressions will come to me. I'll be doing all the work while you take five. I am not going to be ransacking your mind in general. We don't have time to look for scandal or childhood trauma or horrible social embarrassments, as much fun as it might be for Kyle. Nor will I be examining your self-image. If I stumble across something somewhere that indicates, say, a crushing insecurity, I will back away from that place and take any impressions I may have gained of that sort to my deathbed. Such is the moral code of a Martian telepath. You know me. You can trust me. I am only looking for the information buried in your subconscious that pertains to these victims and visitors from other states of being. I am only searching for messages and impressions of outside universes that may be harbored within you. I am only looking for clues that might save our world. You know me. You can trust me.
The Martian's face was lowered, his eyes half closed, unfocused. Wally wondered if the scan had begun. He didn't think he felt anything different in his head, but then, he vaguely realized, he wasn't thinking of much at all, and he didn't think he could move had he wanted to. Wally slipped off to another place. He vaguely remembered the Manhunter telling him that he'd be aware of nothing. Yet, here he was. Words didn't seem very important anymore. In fact, they held no weight at all, nor did anything else outside this place. There was nothing but here. There was no sense of space, of points and lines and planes and time to reference. No light, no dark, no color, no texture. Here was a state of being.
Wally?
What?
Wally.
A figure appeared near him. There it was, the dark figure from his journey into the extra-cosmic fragment, so tall and spindly, with its plates of chitinous armor, and its large, flattened head with huge, luminous eyes. It seemed to be swimming toward him, struggling through gulfs of nothingness that swept against the figure like a surging current. Impossibly strong and graceful, yet unable to break through and join Wally. Most of him regarded this with detached disinterest, but a small part of him somewhere deep inside was very concerned. Then Wally blinked, or maybe the dark figure blinked, or maybe his mind shuddered. Suddenly the figure was much closer, standing right before Wally, gently sweeping its long thin arms and oversized hands in a sculling motion, as if it were treading water. He could see its sideways, football-shaped head with startling clarity now, the intricate overlapping of crustaceous plates, rich and black and filigreed with even darker alien inscriptions, shimmering with strange life. And the eyes, twin portals into yet another place. The fierce glowing eyes were so close, were burning right into Wally's, and there was something so familiar there.
Wally, meet me at the Great Constant.
Another blink, and it was distant again, swimming against that invisible, irresistible current. It started to break apart, slowly at first. Little pieces of black chipped off the edges of its silhouette, carried away into the void. Then, more and more of it melted away, until it had dissolved like a sandcastle overrun by the tide. Or a structure vaporized by an atomic blast. The eyes were the last to go. Wally seldom felt calm. It wasn't often his racing mind rested, but it did now. He contentedly drifted into the nothing.